Today will be our last day for reading from Gina Lehr's book, The Four Teresas. Tomorrow we'll go over the conclusion of the book. And we are reading on page 108, Joined with John of the Cross.
St. John of the Cross, a beloved saint of the Carmelite order, is another link between the four Teresas. He and Teresa of Avila were contemporaries and friends. They worked simultaneously on the reforms of the Carmelite order, sharing many of the struggles, rejections, and hardships of the task. Both of them were mystical writings whose supernatural prayer experiences were similar in many ways. People often consult these two doctors of the church in tandem as experts on the life of prayer. The other Teresas did not know St. John of the Cross personally, but he was nonetheless influential in their lives. St. Therese was strongly attracted to his writings, which are filled with the same poetic passion and love for God that resonated so deeply in her own heart. Even when she ceased to do much other reading, she continued to relish his works. She wrote, "Ah, how many lights have I not drawn from the works of our Holy Father, St. John of the Cross." Therese latched on to many of St. John's ideas and wove them into her own writings. Mother Teresa of Calcutta knew well such references from The Story of a Soul, which introduced the reader to St. John of the Cross through the eyes of St. Therese of Lisieux. St. Teresa Benedicta, too, had a great affinity for St. John of the Cross. For the holy card that commemorated her profession into the Carmelite, she chose a quote from his Ascent of Mount Carmel: "To arrive at being all, desire to be nothing." Her great spiritual work, The Science of the Cross, explored the teachings of this holy man. During retreats, she loved to meditate on his writings. She found solace and guidance through his exploration of the spirituality of the cross. Teresa of Avila, Therese, and Mother Teresa all had personal experiences with the dark night of the soul that St. John of the Cross explored. Teresa of Avila suffered tremendous doubts and fears, even in the midst of some of her greatest spiritual consolations. Thoughts of unworthiness plagued her for a time, as well as the spiritual disease of scrupulosity. Even prayer became a great struggle for her because of these torments. The writings of St. John of the Cross express how God draws souls nearer to himself through such trials. Therese also experienced the spiritual darkness that St. John of the Cross so masterfully described. When she was dying of tuberculosis, she no longer felt the sweet company of Jesus or any consolations from her faith, leading to incredible spiritual agony. She was tempted to doubt God's existence, but she continued to make acts of faith, trusting in God, even though she couldn't sense his presence. She made deliberate references to St. John of the Cross, who spoke of a soul being purified by this dark night in order to be consumed entirely by love. Therese believed, even in the midst of this spiritual agony, that she was dying of love.
Mother Teresa knew the isolation of spiritual darkness as well. For most of her years of service, she no longer felt the same closeness to Jesus that had led her to begin the Missionaries of Charity. Instead, she felt loneliness and doubt. Yet she unceasingly offered herself to Jesus, meeting him every day in the Eucharist and then in the people she served. For Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, a keen sensitivity to the spirituality of the cross was already present when she chose her religious name. In declaring herself to be blessed by the cross, she acknowledged that the suffering she had already endured and the trial she anticipated were, like the experience of the dark night, ultimately aimed at a deeper union with Christ. As all signs had indicated, the horrors of persecution of the Jewish people only increased during her lifetime. She felt it was her mission to prayerfully bring the light of Christ into this tragic darkness on behalf of those who did not know for themselves the saving power of the cross. Even in the midst of suffering, all four of these women were happy, peaceful, and filled with the love of God. Suffering is an element of every human life, holy or otherwise. There's no escaping it. Some of us deal with more trials than others or feel them more acutely, but none of us live in a world free of disease, destruction, despair, and death. Such is our fallen human condition. Hence, it's not surprising that all four of the Teresas suffered. How they dealt with the suffering is refreshing. Instead of becoming bitter or angry, they accepted their trials and offered them back to God. This leads to another point of convergence for these women.
Shared surrender. All four Teresas believed in the importance of surrendering their lives to God. They all sought to live for God's will, not for their own. This surrender was not just a mental exercise. Through the concrete circumstances of their lives, they recognized God's will being played out, and they responded accordingly. They saw opportunities in their suffering to trust in God precisely when it was a challenge. They recognized the chance to love God unconditionally, not just when he was showering them with consolations. This total surrender to God's will helped Teresa of Avila bear insults and criticisms as she pursued her reforms. It enabled Therese of Lisieux to say she would be just as happy to remain bedridden and ill if this was God's will. Teresa Benedicta could humbly accept the anonymity of life in the Carmelite novitiate because she knew it was where God wanted her to be. And Mother Teresa of Calcutta lovingly embraced diseased and disfigured people because she believed it was God's will that she serve the poorest of the poor. Therese of Lisieux's idea that God always gave her what she wanted because she always wanted what he gave her could sum up the attitudes of all the Teresas. They did not live in a state of restless anxiety, constantly searching for God's will as if it were somewhere else. Because of this free surrender, they radiated the divine light of contentment, joy, and peace. These women smiled sincerely in challenging situations, even when church authorities were resistant to their plans. They gave the benefit of the doubt to people who were difficult in circumstances that were less than ideal. They freely offered humble, cheerful service to Christ and his church with an untiring spirit of generosity. Like Mary, they were full of grace, not full of grumble.
United through Mary. Devotion to Mary was literally woven into the fabric of the Teresas' lives. Three of them wore the Carmelite habit, an exterior sign of interior devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. The members of the Carmelite order understood the scapula, the topmost piece of their habit, as a physical reminder to call upon Mary in their needs, to contemplate her life and her virtues, and to imitate her. They also show their Marian devotion with the white mantle of Carmel, a symbol of her purity. As for our non-Carmelite order, non-Carmelite Mother Teresa selected a habit for her order whose only adornment is a stripe of blue, the color symbolizing Mary. Mary was part of two of these saints' lives in an especially personal and immediate way, because they had lost their earthly mothers at a young age. Saint Teresa of Avila tells us, "When my mother died and I began to realize my loss, I went in my distress to an image of Our Lady and, weeping bitterly, begged her to be my mother." Saint Therese, after mentioning how she was deprived of her earthly mother, wrote, "I put all my heart into speaking to Our Lady, into consecrating myself to her as a child, throwing itself into the arms of its mother, asking her to watch over her." Both Teresa of Avila and Therese had supernatural visions in which they believed Mary communicated with them. Perhaps they received this unusual grace because of the intimate way they had entrusted themselves to Mary's maternal care. Although Teresa Benedicta and Mother Teresa didn't experience the same dramatic dependence upon Mary as the other Teresas, they too followed her as their guide. Not only did they honor her in their personal lives, But these two Teresas often spoke publicly about Mary, consistently encouraging other women to follow her example. Devotion to the Mother of God was one of the essential elements that shaped the femininity of the four Teresas. Without ever neglecting their love for her son, all four of these holy women turned to the Blessed Mother to help them along their way. They found in her not only an intercessor, as any good mother is for her children, but also an inspiration. They wanted to imitate the perfect handmaid of the Lord, who followed God's will so generously.
Holiness in daily life. Like Mary, all four of these women knew that God's will unfolds in the events of daily life. They believed that sanctity comes from living an ordinary life with great love. In our age, St. Thérèse of Lisieux has made famous the little things with great love idea. But Teresa of Avila, her patron saint, articulated the concept centuries before. In fact, this idea of St. Teresa of Avila traveled through the centuries into the thoughts of the other Teresas. Teresa of Avila, the Lord does not look so much at the magnitude of anything we do as at the love with which we do it. Teresa of Lisieux, Jesus does not demand great actions from us, but simply surrender and gratitude. He has no need of our works, but only of our love. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. St. Thérèse of the Child Jesus shows you, even in the little details of daily life, how one can follow him. Mother Teresa. To the good God, nothing is little, because he is so great and we so small. Yes, my dear children, be faithful in little practices of love, of little sacrifices, which will make you Christ-like. The four Teresas understood that sanctity is attainable by everyone, regardless of their specific situation. We can all follow the commandments that inherently yield holiness in those who follow them. To love God with our whole heart, soul, and mind, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. Mother Teresa insisted that everyone can keep these commandments because God cannot command the impossible. Thérèse believed the same, emphasizing that Jesus himself is the one who helps us keep his commandments by acting through us. St. Teresa of Avila directly connected the greatest commandments with the pursuit of holiness. She wrote in Interior Castle, "The true perfection consists in the love of God and of our neighbor, and the more nearly perfect is our observance of these two commandments, the nearer to perfection we shall be." Teresa Benedicta of the Cross felt that these commandments were so important that they could certainly be a subject worthy of an entire lifetime of meditation. Thérèse said, "The more united I am to him, the more also do I love my sisters." Mother Teresa believed that God put the commandment of loving our neighbor on the same footing as the first commandment.
All four Teresas believed that perfect love for God flows into love for our neighbors. Thus, the two commandments are virtually one. This is why we associate the saints with acts of service and charity toward humanity. Their love for God impelled them to reach out to others. As such, it is a mistake to reduce the saints to their acts of service and charity. They wouldn't be models of service if they weren't first models of loving God. Before all else, they were immersed in a life of prayer and the sacraments, which connected them continually to Christ. This, of course, is the most important connection the four Teresas share. They were all models of holiness. They did more than talk about loving God. They put that love into action. This connection extends beyond these four women, of course. Every saint in history, all the holy men and women who have gone before us, have shared in the experience of loving God and loving others. Now we are invited to join their company by loving God with our whole being and allowing that love to reach to the ends of the earth.
Wow, what a powerhouse book. And there we have it. That is the wrap-up of the fifth chapter. We still have the conclusion we're going to read tomorrow. But anything in particular stand out among anybody on today's readings?
I want to bring up, like, on page 109, Thérèse was tempted that God's existence wasn't there, that she did not sense his presence. So it's on page 109, middle paragraph. St. Thérèse, she was tempted to doubt God's existence, but she continued to make acts of faith trusting in God, even though she couldn't sense his presence.
I think that's a very important thing to ponder and reflect on, Mary Beth, because how many times do we just find we're going through the motions of our faith life? It's reassuring to know that these saints were there too. They went through that as well, and it was just that simple trust and faith in God that got them through it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading St. John of the Cross now, the Dark Night. And I think that's hits the nail on the head. Like if you're going through this, I highly recommend reading St. John of the Cross, Dark Night, because he basically itemizes what you're going through. And he tells you that he explains it to you really well. And then he just basically tells you how to handle it. And, this is what Mother Teresa went through, right? Apparently she went like through a dark night pretty much for the whole of her life. And the way that she talks about this on the interview with, I believe it's the Irish interview. If you Google Mother Teresa, Irish TV, 1974, it's on YouTube. It's a really good interview. And she kind of describes this dark night. And the first part of the dark night, the dark night of the soul is the first part is a dark night of the senses. And then the second part is the dark night of the spirits, right? And the dark night of the senses is the one where, as far as I can understand it, it's because especially if you're coming out of a more secular existence, your consolations in life are largely tied to the material world. So your value system is extremely tied up in material consolations. And as you become more, in communion with God, these consolations, you start pulling yourself away from them. So you're kind of uprooting your whole value system. And that's clearly going to be quite a painful process. Because you're not getting these sort of consolations, you start to wonder if life has any consolation at all in God. And so that's a quite painful process. But it's also entirely normal, as far as I can tell, as far as St. John of the Cross is concerned. So the fact that Thérèse of Lisieux went through this, as well, and that she turned to St. John of the Cross, in a way, as a sort of a touchstone for what was going on. St. John of the Cross is an enormously useful guide in this process.
And I was just going to say that Father Donald Haggerty, who is a priest at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, wrote an amazing book about St. John of the Cross. I'm just really unpacking what he means and just explaining it so well and clearly. It's really a good book. Yeah, my husband Matthew just interviewed him on his Art of Catholic podcast about this book.
Thank you. I will definitely listen to that. I love Matthew's podcast, so I'll definitely tune into that.
So I'm really involved with the science of sainthood and facilitate that. And we just went through the dark night of the soul in the explanation. And I guess if you're really in it, you know it. I mean, I know I've doubted at times. I mean, there's times that I have doubt. And then you make those acts of faith and just trusting that's God. I always think of Pasquale, wager, that always act as if there is a God. And if there's not, then I didn't screw up. If I act like there isn't a God and I was wrong, it could be really bad.
Now, Kathy, I understand when you were in your 30s, you had a couple of pretty big crosses to carry. You had brain surgery and you lost your husband. Those are common times, I think, when people go through those moments of despair and yearning and wondering where God is at. How did your faith get you through those difficult times?
For me, I think I did the same thing that, once again, what Mother Teresa did, is just keep giving acts of faith. I had heard a story about a man. It was a friend of my late husband's who had told him that he lost his faith when his father died. And I know people that will say that. And I remember while I was doing CPR on my husband, I was like, Lord, please don't let me lose my faith over this. And I just think he honored that. He helped me through those times.
And I understand that after your husband's death, you actually saw the fruit of faith through him.
There were people that were touched by my husband, like 5 or 6 people that you would consider cynics after he died. And he didn't come to me. I kept saying, why doesn't he come to me? Talk to me. My one sister-in-law said he's closer to you than he is to anybody else. And he's just right there and walking beside you. But I had no sense of feeling at all. There was nothing.
I've been around people that are suffering from cancer we had a family that was going through a death of their parent. And this woman who was going through chemotherapy herself made sure she signed up to bring meals and arranged it in between her chemotherapy treatments. And the joy on her face, like how often we are so introverted looking at our own, but one of the clearest ways to get moved through this is to look outward at others. And it's amazing how something transforms in us with the suffering we're going through.
Gabe, you look excited over there. Do you have something to share?
I found the transcript from the 1974 Mother of Teresa interview where she's asked, when you go through this dark night, she says, the only answer is to cling to Christ through blind faith. So that's essentially what Mother Teresa did. She clung to Christ through blind faith. If that's what Mother Teresa needs to get through it, then I think it's good enough for us.
What a great book this has been. It is time we wrap things up for today. That wraps up our fifth and technically final chapter of the book. Gina Lair is going to join us tomorrow, and she will read the conclusion of her book, The Four Teresas. We want to thank everyone who's participated during this podcast and everyone who's persevered towards the end. But we know ultimately your soul is being fed. Please keep us in your prayers.